if the spark of hope and the spark of optimism really went out within humanity, I don't think we would last a day. Without it, life would cease to exist on this planet.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. We made it through January in one piece-ish. I mean, the beautiful thing is we've had these tools to come back to for everything that's coming up externally and certainly internally. And I don't know about you, but it's been incredibly medicinal for me to work through inner child this month, especially as I'm nearing becoming a mother myself and in my third trimester. And I've really reached a hormonal state that's incredibly unstable a lot of the times. Thank God for Max for holding down the fort a lot and going on my emotional wave with me. But it's been really beautiful to look at how that's okay through inner child, which it never really felt like totally in childhood. So just really wanting to pat ourselves on the back who have dug into this together. And this is our last week to kind of really suck out anything we need, revisit the days of inner child that might have come up with a question mark or a blank spot, or we really didn't get to the depths of. Something that I shared on Instagram, if you don't follow us there, it's at @tobemagnetic. It's where I'll share once a week, sort of a weekly update of everything we're working through collectively together. But one tip that I shared last week that I think can actually help us tap in so much deeper, and it's such an easy lift. And I did this actually driving up to the Forest Retreat House. I was up there for a week. It's to hop on Spotify and tap into the music of the day you're working through. Of course, once you move out of childhood and more into preteen adolescence, make a little playlist of the music that really affected you during that time. All of us, I think, certainly can resonate with the angst that was coming up. But what I find that listening to a playlist from that time, especially one that deeply touches us, is that it'll instantly bring up the uniqueness that we felt that the world or our direct community or caretakers didn't get or understand, and just see what's coming up listening to that before dropping into a DI, and watch how connected you instantly are with that age, with your essence, what you wanted to do, your dreams and hopes, who you hope to become. And certainly it shows you the masks of your insecurities. So that's one little tip to play with as you're rounding out inner child this week. And know that this isn't a challenge, so you can hop in and do inner child anytime you're feeling like it. Or if you're a brand new listener, we always recommend, of course, going through how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. So there will be a point at which you dance with inner child, and this will just be a wonderful tip to engage with it deeper. You can find the link below for the calendar we've had all month, how we've been kind of joining in this together. And for those of us who did, you know, imbibe in the very first product we put out with Alexis Smart, which is called the Unblocked Flower Remedy, I really went into depth a couple of episodes back with Alexis Smart about this remedy and what it does. We've been taking that side by side with Inner Child. And I'm sorry to those of you who might be on the edge of your seat still, because our very first batch sold out in one weekend. So we highly recommend, if it's something you're interested in taking, check out the link below and you can add yourself to the waitlist. It should be restocking pretty soon so that you'll get the email to be able to receive it. It's also something I'm really proud of, that it's a very accessible price point. It's $48. Over the course of a month, you take it 4 drops, 4 times a day under the tongue, and you'll really start to notice the benefits after 3 weeks. And here's the beautiful part. Collectively, as a community, we are going to be moving into Unblock Love. And for those of us who are in partnership, there's a really fun little mini workshop we're going to be releasing that was masterminded by Coach Atara Valentine. So everybody should have a little something to work through together in February. So that will be launching very soon. If you're not a part of the email list, make sure to check out the link below in order to sign up for it, or you can text us at the number below in order to be on our texting service, where you'll be the first to receive when we release that. Today's episode is really powerful. I think every friend of mine during this last year has reached out to me and said, "Are you going to have Dr. Zach Bush on the podcast?" And I've been following his work and totally blown away by it. I think you will be as well. In fact, when I was communicating with him, and I don't have this happen very much, there were moments during the episode that I was starting to well up with tears because I felt like he was speaking a lot of truth that we don't really empower ourselves as an individual and as a collective. So I found the information that he shares to be tremendously powerful. Obviously, always keep an open mind. Some stuff you may agree with, some stuff you may not agree with, and that's the beautiful thing and the respectful thing about everybody sharing their perspectives, their science, their beliefs, their discoveries. Something else that's really cool that he introduced me to, in fact, I'll be really transparent. His team sent a box to both Jessica and I. It's his product called Ion. And I didn't think I could take it because of pregnancy. And in fact, right when we hopped on the call, he said, "Yes, absolutely. A lot of our community who has taken it report that it's their healthiest babies they've ever had." So I started taking it right away, which has been really, really remarkable. And in fact, after this episode, right when I got off, you'll hear him explain the product towards the end. And it was like, wow, this is amazing. It's not a supplement. But as he goes into it, it's actually this really incredible product that he developed to allow all of our systems to start communicating again, from our microbiome to our brain. And he describes it much more eloquently than I do. So I reached out to our director of operations and said, "Anybody on the team that's interested in taking this product, let's buy it for them and send it to them." Because yeah, I was just really, really blown away by his research and what he's created. So you'll hear about that, Ion Biome. So you can go ahead and use the code, all caps, TBM15, to receive 15% off to try that product. Because like I did with the team, when I hear something that I really believe in, I'm like, anybody should try this. And so Max and I have been trying it now for 2.5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks now. And you'll hear Jessica's take on it as well, because she's actually been trying it much longer than I had, since I didn't think I could take it due to pregnancy. But right away, it took away any of my nasal drip I receive when I eat dairy. So it helped me digest dairy very easily. It's also helped me cope with any type of sweets I want to eat. So when I eat chocolate, I have zero effect. So I've really noticed that it's taken away my sensitivities. So curious to see how this continues to go. But Max has really enjoyed it as well. So we'll see what you think. Aside from that, let's get into this really, really powerful conversation with Dr. Zach Bush, who's an MD, a physician specializing in internal medicine, endocrinology, which is always my favorite topic of conversation after fertility and hormonal issues, and hospice care. He's an internationally recognized educator and thought leader on the microbiome as it relates to health, disease, and food systems. His passion for education reaches across many disciplines, including topics such as the role of soil and water ecosystems in the human genomics, immunity, and gut and brain health. He's very profound. He's been a very big voice in the last year. And yeah, let's hear what he has to say. On to the episode. Welcome, Dr. Zach Bush. So excited to be having this conversation. I don't think I've had a friend reach out to me. I think all of them have collectively to be like, "Are you going to have him on during this time?" So I know a lot of people that are going to be very, very excited for this episode. But first, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you all the friends who recommended it, and thanks for the audience participation to make this really special.
Wonderful. And yes, thank you so much. The first question we ask everybody, it's a bit woo-woo, so bear with us in our audience, but we love to know what your astrology sign is.
Well, it depends on whether you're Western or Vedic, I guess, but
mostly Western, we cruise.
I'm Scorpio in the Western.
Excellent. And then Vedic for anybody listening.
I'm Aquarius.
Right. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I'm a Sag in Vedic and then Aquarius Western. So we'll have a great deep convo. Well, first and foremost, give us a little bit about your cultural background and upbringing and how you kind of came to this work.
Yeah. Born in Boulder, Colorado, and I was born to two wonderful hippies that had moved out to Boulder as part of the hippie generation. And they went from hippies to Jesus freaks when they found their God moments there in Boulder, Colorado. They joined a little home church that was an outreach to the street people and hippies of the time. And my dad had his Jesus moment through that. And my mother had just had her Jesus moment on a mountaintop in Colorado before that. And so kind of a beautiful story of young, open minds having a spiritual epiphany a couple days apart, and they stumbled into each other in the dorms of University of Colorado in their first week or two of college and shared their respective stories. And that really started the whole journey of their lives, which would lead to four great kids and the journey that we've had as a family. And so my culture is really built around a very tight, you know, home-based community of, you know, spiritual seekers that built an unusual church that was kind of modeled on the Book of Acts, that had no pastor and was built around elders and deacons as outlined in the Book of Acts. And so it was an interesting dive for me at a very early age into apologetics and the debate around theology and the discourse around theologic perspectives and arguments became really part of my life. And I was doing that by the time I was in junior high and high school. I was very involved in starting to lead youth groups and starting to lead Bible studies and all of that. And that was kind of my worldview. And I was, I would say, pretty baked in the box of the Christian worldview. And, you know, was, you know, eager to always debate that with anybody coming from any other spiritual background. And then as part of my kind of spiritual maturation, a number of people in my church community had started taking a course called Perspectives on World Christianity. And it was a fascinating semester-long course that was an intense study experience. It was, you know, tens of thousands of pages of content. And it was looking at the story of Christianity through the lens of Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists around the world, and really looking at, you know, the difference between the written words and the myths that had been kind of baked around those words, and how we have expanded from some sort of deep truth within a lot of our teachings to a lot of storytelling that is culturally informed rather than spiritually informed, perhaps. And so that was the beginning of my broadening, I think, of my experience. And then went over to the Philippines and delivered babies with a group of midwives when I was 19. And that was, you know, my first look at really deep multi-generational poverty and systematic abuse of peoples and suppression of developing nations and their peoples. And so living outside of the squats in Quezon City, outside of Manila, was a real eye-opening experience. And, you know, birthing babies in that environment really changed my perspective on just about everything it meant to be American or human. You know, it challenged all of those levels. And so I think that was another big opening in my life. And that set me up for what would really change my world, was doing ICU care as a medical doctor years later. In the ICU setting, I was doing a lot of critical care, bone marrow transplant units, and just general med ICUs, and experiencing a lot of end of life, you know, transition of life kind of moments, and started to experience people coming back and forth across the veil of what we call death, which became very obvious that it was not an end point, but something more like another second birth for the spiritual awareness. And these people were coming back from the other side of the veil with extraordinary stories of what they saw on the other side. And those moments have really challenged me to keep being willing to deconstruct myself and my worldviews and my programming for an experiential truth, and to look to my own personal experience and my own personal, you know, integration with spirituality, apart from cultural or community perspectives or storytelling around spirituality or the reality that we live in, and start to really try to claim that for myself.
And then how did that bridge to what is so pivotal in the work that you do now, which has to do with ecological health, soil and water ecosystems and human genomics, immunity and gut brain health? Because that just really seems to be the focal point that anchors down to what you believe is the most healing, radical thing we need to do as a world, as a total, total whole.
The opening of opportunity that comes when you are able to, for a moment, surrender your current religious and worldview, perhaps, whether it be sociopolitical or otherwise, as you start to surrender that for a moment and just have a couple of breaths in open space and say, you know, I've been told all of this stuff. There's a bunch of philosophy of thousands of years of Western civilization that has been baked into my head. If I let go of that for a moment and just, you know, explore the possibility that I'm here right now and I have nothing to do with anything of the past, and I could be, or I have the potential to be, a blank slate, a new canvas for life to be expressed upon. And maybe that's a sense of soul purpose. Maybe that's a sense of finally the expression of self-identity rather than community identity that's been imposed on you. But when you take those first steps and you start to create some mindfulness space for you to become something other than a conglomeration of all of the previous human atrocities and traumas and tragedies and maybe a few joys and, you know, nostalgia baked in there, which is a dangerous one. You know, we get all of that broken apart for a moment and freed up. Your biology starts to do some really amazing things. We can see people, you know, heal in microseconds rather than years. You know, we can see people become different people. They develop completely different perspectives on who they are, what they're here to do. It changes their relationships fundamentally. It changes, perhaps most of all, their relationship with themselves. And so as we start to go from that spiritual worldview into the biologic space, we realize that, or we can realize that, the beliefs and memories of life before right now is what is programming the reality we live in right now. And if we were to break that cycle, if we were to, you know, interrupt that with a complete neurologic shift where we no longer held on to the histories of trauma, our stories and narratives of how we got to where we are right now, we could be a completely different person. And at the molecular level, this is realized not in the molecules, but in the atoms that compose those molecules. And so there's a huge desire for this, you know, $3.5 to $4 trillion U.S. medical industrial complex is the largest company ever created. It's five times bigger than the entire military defense budget of the United States is our current healthcare costs. And so at $3.8 trillion, you know, that's supposed to be at $5 trillion by 2025. That mega energy that's around this wants us to believe that we are these Newtonian biologic machines that crank around and decay and rust and fall apart, and that's just normal. We're dependent on some sort of technological breakthrough, whether it be vaccines or drugs or chemo or antidepressants or sleeping meds or whatever we find ourselves dependent upon. The story wants us to believe it stops there. But those cells that are decaying, that are aging more and more quickly with every passing decade, those cells are composed of atoms that are disappearing and reappearing in their physical state every millionth of a second. And so we've got this quantum reality below the Newtonian, very physical appearance of that reality. And so when we start talking about having a breath of moment where we release all of the previous traumas, all of the previous beliefs of who we are, what's happened to us, what's brought us here, we allow for the body that's born in the next millionth of a second to be something completely different and to be free of the memory of the traumas, because the damage that we are currently have within our body is a memory of damage. It's not currently happening. The traumas are remembered at the cellular level largely because of our conscious projection of who we are. And so we are consciously projecting on our biology every millionth of a second a historic narrative of who we are and what's happening. And that sounds really trippy and out there. And well, that sounds really nice, Zach, but does that really work? And we have just startling examples in medicine of just how profound it is to create that space. And one of them is in multiple personality disorders, when people will get these neurologic schisms where they, at their core, believe they are somebody different than who they were just moments ago. And these bodies that become projected from that neurologic belief of who they are in that moment projects a different body. And so, for example, there's well-established, you know, stories of a mole appearing on the face of somebody when they're in one personality, but a few minutes later, when they switch personalities, that mole is no longer there. Or, you know, one personality actually has cancer and the other personalities don't. And this is unbelievable that we can be a projection of our own belief system about who we are and how we've gotten here. And it begs the opportunity of what does it take, rather than palliating a neurologic belief system of the diseases you have and the person you are today, why don't we instead begin to train ourselves how to release the entire history to become totally present right now, to manifest a completely different body in this space? And the reason we don't do that is manyfold. The reasons are typically sound very altruistic. Well, I love my family and I love the people that are dependent on me. And I love my memory of Christmases and I love my birthday. And I actually love that I had these traumas in my life because those made me resilient. And my identity is now one of kindness and gentleness in the context of resilience in the face of trauma. And so if I let go of my history of trauma, then it means that I have to let go of my identity as a resilient person or a kind person in the face of resilience. And so we get tied up in these identities that sound really good, sound altruistic, but in fact, they're keeping us tied to a trauma that's projecting a disease state within our body, that's necessitating a disease state within our body. So we have an emotional attachment to our disorder and disease that keeps us in that space. So that's a very convoluted long story as to why does it boil down for me in my life as a medicine doctor now to actually spend most of my time talking about soil, water, and air. Because if we really come to understand what it means to be alive right now, it comes down to a reality of you are the conglomeration of physical matter being brought into a particle moment from what was moments ago a wave state to a solid particle state in a millionth of a second moment. And you are really soil, water, and air in some organization that's been charged by sunlight. And so biophotonic energy from the sun charging the plants, charging the planet, that would be consumed in the source of food that would then be liberated in its energy within your cells through the mitochondria. And now you're an animated biophotonic star. You're a solar force at the cellular level, and that solar force is animating some combination of soil, water, and air. Soil, the nutrients, the minerals that would compose the substrates that would then become the nutrients that would build a cell. The air, obviously the exchange of the ethers, carbon dioxide, oxygen, and the like, nitrogen. And then, of course, the water, which is 70% of your body. So you are soil, water, and air, animated by a biophotonic energy that's here for a particle moment. And that's the description of life as it's boiled down for me now after 25 years in medicine. That's how simple it's gotten.
I mean, you're speaking to the right community here and you're speaking our language. And I really want to get into the soil, water, and air more. But one question, and maybe it's really basic based on everything you just said, how much control do you think we have if we disassociate with all of this old programming and these identities of mind over matter?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think, ultimately we must have total control in the sense that nothing can really exist outside of your experience. Outside of your experience of this present moment, there's nothing that's real to you. And the universe that's manifesting around you is the result of your perceptions and your perspectives on that situation. And we see so many great examples of, an event happening in a crowded place, and it might be a robbery or somebody gets shot or whatever traumatic event. and you try to get 30 eyewitnesses, and they're all going to give you different perspectives on what the reality was around that situation in that moment, because they've all got their own experience that is their only reality. And it's irrelevant to their reality that somebody else saw that the guy who shot the person was wearing a red shirt, when in fact they knew it was black, because in their experience that was a black hoodie, and that can't be changed by the other person's perception. And so, as blatant as those, you know, differing opinions of the situation were, they can't change the other person's experience. And so I'm fascinated by that, in that the thing that defines my moment right now is entirely my responsibility. It's entirely my neurologic interface with the particles around me. And so in that way, I can tell a completely different story to my body or to my mind and have a completely different result. And so at that level, we have complete, you know, dominion over our experience and over the body and life that we manifest out of it.
Have you ever seen this in real time? Like, I'll give you context. We have a girl on our team who is a fourth generation Christian Scientist, and I've really kind of gone down the rabbit hole of that and mind over matter. And it's just mind-boggling, these spontaneous healings that can happen based on precisely what you're talking about. And obviously her programming, and even on an epigenetic level as fourth generation, is just really, really profound. So like, looking at her community, of course, there's exceptions to every rule, but she literally, in her own experience, doesn't have anybody who's ever had illness, doesn't know anybody in her direct community, and it's just not a part of her reality. And that fascinates me beyond belief, because it seems like the ultimate, you know, trump card.
Yeah. And, you know, the tendency there, and I would include myself in this, is to look at something like Christian Science and poo-poo it and treat it like a cult and make a whole narrative around that's impossible. And that's how I was, you know, certainly raised. I was raised to believe that not only was that a cult, that also, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses were wrong, and the Muslims were wrong, and the Hindus were wrong, and the Buddhists were wrong. Like, the narrative I was trained into was that 80% of the world around me was just fundamentally wrong on just a few basic philosophies, which then rendered them, yeah, at some sort of lower level of development or enlightenment than I had been given as a kid who got, you know, born into a little hippie family in Boulder, Colorado. And so we have this extraordinary capacity to denigrate other people around us for any number of reasons, and therefore miss the whole potential of being alive right now. And the fact that we all showed up 7.8 billion strong right now, 7.8 billion souls show up right now, and are immediately programmed into not believing the experience of anybody else. And in some ways, that's true. Everybody's experience is going to be their own. But the piece that we're missing is respect.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
We lose respect for one another through the programming, and therefore we cannot leave space for the other perspective. And so the tendency is for the media and churches and everybody else to attack the Christian Science story, because it challenges their fundamental worldview that sickness and death is inevitable, and sickness and decay is natural, and all of these other narratives that can be put around that. And therefore, the Christian Scientist who's maintaining this extraordinary physical experience of being new every single moment is put in a place where they have to recoil from the common narrative. And so it does end up being a cult or some sort of, you know, sequestered community, because they can't interact with the common narrative that's being shoved down the throat of everybody else, which is disease is not only natural, it's here to show us the opportunity to create multi-billion dollar drug companies to solve for these problems of disease. And that dominates everything in the news. The war on cancer, the war on Parkinson's, the war on Alzheimer's. You know, philanthropic organizations reinforce all of it, right? Give to the war on breast cancer, give money here, give money to this problem over here. Instead of us realizing we could manifest a world that doesn't have these problems. And I think that's easy to say when you're in a comfortable creative space. It's very difficult to say that when you're a single mother, black, in inner city America, and you're being chewed through by the needs of the day. You're working three jobs and you got three kids that are suffering under a public school system that's now, you know, forcing them to go remote, and they're Zoom conferencing into classes that are no longer functional, and your life is falling apart around you. It's very, very difficult to have the creative space to create a new reality for yourself. And so this is where systematic and systemic bias, racism, socioeconomic suppression happens. Is it doesn't even have to be somebody walking into your house to take away your freedom. It's a society that's taken away your rest to the point where you can't be creative anymore, and you can't be in that creative mind to create the different reality around you. And so entrenched poverty, which is, you know, something I moved into when I went east in Colorado, where I grew up, and, you know, the West is a very young place. Like, it's only, you know, California was created in the late 1800s, so 120-year-old state. So there's no such thing as fifth, sixth generation poverty there, because it's been a boom economy in California for 100 years. You go out to Virginia, and, you know, when I was, you know, set up my clinic in 2010, when I left the university finally, I set up in this rural town of 550 people, and I got to witness, you know, fifth, sixth generation poverty for the first time. These families had been in rural South since the Civil War and impoverished, and watching the epigenetic patterns of disease and, you know, all of that manifest in this deep state of poverty. And this was mostly white poverty. And this is some African Americans in the community, but much different than California and Colorado, where the majority of our, you know, low socioeconomic suppressed communities are Hispanic. And there's almost no Hispanic presence. It's almost all white and black, you know, multi-generational poverty. And what I really mean by poverty is not some sort of inability to make money or inability to work. These are some of the hardest working people I've ever met. The poverty, I believe, is really defined by the lack of space to create your own reality. And you are a complete victim, a complete pawn within somebody else's narrative at this level of poverty. You know, I grew up in low-income housing in Colorado and was, you know, surrounded by Hmong people that were refugees from South Asia. And the Hmong people, you know, that taught my mother how to garden in our community gardens and all of this, or the people living in low-income housing outside of Boulder, Colorado, didn't have the belief that they were going to be in that situation the rest of their lives. They had a belief that they were in a temporary setback. They had lost their country. They had lost their culture. But they had brought their culture with them to a new land, and they were building new community. And the Hmong women were dressed in their, you know, traditional garb, you know, as they squatted in their community gardens and talked among each other, talking story over the same ancestral wisdom that they had left behind was being carried forward. You don't find that kind of hopefulness. You don't find that kind of sense of rooted culture in the fifth generation poverty, white or otherwise, in rural South. There's a deep hopelessness that sets in parts of the United States and parts of the world where you have multi-generational poverty that is defined by this failure of hope, this failure of creativity. And that's I think, the most fearsome thing I've ever glimpsed. And I think it happens in prisons to the nth degree, where you have multi-generational prison communities that have completely lost hope of having life outside of that reality. And it becomes a self-fulfilling, you know, pattern of behavior generation to generation. Children ending up in prison again, just as their parents had been, because that path, that narrative, that lack of hope, starts to create a very potent cycle of abuse, trauma, and hopelessness, and a failure of creativity for all of that.
Everything you just talked about highlighted such an important topic. And even going into any type of impoverished community that, you know, is even local to us, beyond everything that you just mentioned, there's also, you know, and I think it's a very strategic, big picture, corporate agenda, but not even having access to healthy food. And there's a lot of toxic waste that ends up inflicting that community worse than most others. So I think that's a really good, you know, segue into, and I think this is something you tackle often, but what is the solution when it comes to media, big pharma agenda, big farming agenda, conventional farming agenda, corporate agenda, that I think is at the root of this suppression, you know, of not having that space to have mind over matter or to have access to health?
You know, there may be a, you know, a unified dark agenda somewhere in the midst there, but I feel like the whole thing, the discussion around the deep state, the discussion around some cabal, the discussion around corporate America or corporate medicine.
Well, to me, I don't totally go all the way there. But for me, it always comes down fundamentally to power and business. Like money. It really comes down to that.
I think you're right. And you know, the whole thing kind of, I think all of that probably exists, you know, whether it be a cabal or deep state, that probably all exists, but it's only because that's the subconscious mind. that is the mind of humanity that's created all of that.
The shadow.
That's the shadow of our reality right now. And so we created that. Like we did that. How did we create that? We did it because we have a deep streak of laziness that's seeking comfort over autonomy, that's seeking convenience over truth.
Security over collective well-being.
Yeah, or security over freedom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have made some very grave decisions about the society we want to live in. And it has resulted in everything that people are now, you know, afraid of and are calling conspiracy theories. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's an obvious result of the lives we chose to live. and so I think we created all of that, you know, and there's no way that the deep state doesn't exist, because we want there to be a deep state to control all the money and create all this wealth so that things can be done on some grandiose scale, so that we can sit around at night watching Netflix instead of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to start weeding our gardens and producing our own food and being, you know, artisans in our own right rather than consumers of other people's art. We have made a decision in Western civilization to outsource life. And that's scary. And I think we're seeing the result of it. We're seeing, you know, the societal instability. We're seeing the suicide rates, the depression, because we outsourced life. And when I say that, I mean creativity again. We outsourced creativity. We decided we didn't have the power to create our own reality. We decided we didn't have the power to create our own health. So we have outsourced to the pharmaceutical industries. We've outsourced to the food industry with 5,000 mile long supply chains to South America, where we abuse workers and do these corporate land grabs and all of this. Like we are such a destructive force because we are lazy, because we are seeking convenience, because we are seeking some sort of cultural comfort rather than autonomy, freedom, and respect for one another. And I just am always impressed when I get back to an indigenous culture that their success is through their lack of want or their lack of need. There's islands in, you know, the South Pacific that boast 94% unemployment rates. And yet they're all completely like the happiest communities on the planet. They're all unemployed because they get up in the morning, they pick some coconuts, and they fish all day, and they come home and they have community, you know, around the dinner table, around the campfire, and they get up the next morning and they have the same provision and the same community and the same joy. And there's no sense of need there. And so when we departed from that sense of provision from nature and decided we were going to control our environments into these techno-autocratic systems in search of what? You know, because when we finally take a vacation from the reality we've created in Western civilization, we tend to go to some remote island and revel for 2 weeks in this place where our cell phone doesn't go off. We have to save up tens of thousands of dollars to go do a trip like that so that we can live for a moment like everybody lived 1,000 years ago. And so we've created a very bizarre reality around us that has necessitated things like corrupt international monetary policy, corrupt, you know, governmental structures, corrupt regulatory agencies, corrupted, you know, public health agencies. You know, everything that's come to light over the recent pandemic is all just shining light on the realities that we all collectively created out of our divorce from the reality that we are the result of soil, water, air, and the sunlight that would animate it. And so we, as we start to reconnect to that reality, we have the ability to let go of the reality we've created in the society we've created. And in so doing, all of the trauma, all the systematic racism, all the systematic socioeconomic abuses would go away instantaneously, just as the cancer would go away instantaneously if we could become new in the moment through a purely creative, co-creative with the universe moment as humanity. And humanity could chart a completely different course. And some days I wake up and I'm really optimistic about that. I think that we're getting close to that. And other days I'm actually really pessimistic about that and feel like there's no way we're going to make the jump, but that's okay. And in the end, it is okay. Like, it's okay if we are actually in the palliative care hospice moment of humanity, and we've only got 60 to 80 years left before we go extinct, which is our current trajectory. And so if that's our reality, that's okay, because it's our journey, and our journey is manifesting whatever we need to learn. Hospice and palliative care was my third subspecialty in medicine, and I've never sat at a deathbed where somebody fundamentally felt like they had the wrong journey.
Wow.
They ultimately realized they lived life and they're here on purpose, and they're dying on purpose. And unfortunately, so many of our patients are so drugged up, they can't communicate or experience any of that. And they die in the fog of drugs and morphine, and they can't see or hear or think. And so I'm fearful for humanity that, you know, that's the only thing that could really screw this up. If we go extinct in 80 years and we're awake for that moment and we're alert, we will, as a species, add to the collective energies of the universe and the intelligence of the universe, that collective wisdom out there. We will add to it for our alert demise. If we instead march into a universal state of drug-induced stupor and don't stay awake for the end, then we will do a huge disservice to the universe, I think. And that's probably the hell that we would describe, is be in such a state of drug-induced delusion or drug-induced numbness that we will fail to be alive in the most critical moment of our rebirth as an energy center of 7.8 billion souls re-entering the cosmos. Let's not make that a drug-induced coma.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase, or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. You know, when you say you wake up optimistic that we can become the creators of our reality in the universe and collectively, what pragmatic steps come to mind for you? What does that look like for you that you teach on?
You know, the optimism is pretty ethereal. You know, it looks to me right now, when you ask the question, I'm sitting there trying to look at it, and it's a little bit like the air we breathe. I can't actually, you know, see the extraordinary density of the air that I consume every second with my breath. I can't see all that nitrogen and oxygen and carbon dioxide. And I cannot see the 10 to the 31 viruses that are filling that airspace. But the amount of genomics and the amount of life energy that's in that space is literally what has given birth to the biodiversity of the planet. The combination of that air and its unique substrates and the viruses that it carries, which is the genetic intelligence of the planet. Without those two things, without the genetic intelligence of the virome, and without the unique combination of oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen, we would not have biology on the planet. And I think optimism is something of the same lane. Without it, life would cease to exist on this planet, in that if the spark of hope and the spark of optimism really went out within humanity, I don't think we would last a day. And the suicide that we see so endemic and epidemic right now around the world would become a universal necessity, because the effort towards life every single split second at the molecular level is extraordinary. There are 70 trillion cells in your human domain that are then being supported by 1.4 quadrillion bacteria with 14 quadrillion mitochondria supporting in the deeper cell space. And then there's, you know, 10 to the 15 billions and billions and billions of viruses within my bloodstream right now that are increasing my genomic intelligence second by second. That's a lot of energy. That's a lot of maintenance. That's a lot of flow. And if my body's disappearing and reappearing every millionth of a second, and there's no more North Star, there's no more optimism, there's no more hope, then that system starts to deteriorate extremely rapidly. And certainly does that on the neurologic level, manifesting in things like major depression, anxiety disorder, suicidality, all of that. But also on the biological levels, accelerating autoimmune disease. As we lose our self-identity at the cellular level, we manifest autoimmunity, where our own immune system loses track of who we are and starts to attack our own body with its own mechanisms. And so we become our own destructive nature, whether it be in an autoimmune disease or in the mind of major depression. And we have this violent deconstruction process. And so when I wake up optimistic for a moment, I feel like I'm depositing something of reality in the human mind. And when I wake up without optimism for that day, I have to have the self-discipline somewhere in there to acknowledge that I'm having a momentary experience of hopelessness. I'm having a momentary experience of depression, having a momentary experience of no path forward. But if I will sleep again and I rest and give myself permission not to know the next step and not feel like that's my future reality, but it's just this reality right this moment, then I can, I think, bank on somebody else's optimism in that moment. And so the more connected our communities become, our collective optimism, our collective hope could be the fuel, that oxygen that we breathe as a species to propel us into the future that we would all want.
Which would be a collective creative space, allowing that collectively amongst everybody in order to create that is sort of what you're getting at as well.
Yeah, I think that that's the creativity is the natural result of optimism, you know. And yeah, I see that now when I'm working with Fortune 500 companies and all these things that a lot of people, you know, feel like are the evil on the planet. But a lot of these new executives that are being hired into these Fortune 500 companies are coming with a different mentality, and they don't have the institutional memory of how they became some of the most abusive forces on the planet. And these are new people coming in with new mindset that want to change the course of humanity through wielding the economic, you know, potency of this company that they've now inherited leadership to. And I'm emboldened by that reality. And when I watch them move into a creative space with the amount of energy that they hold in these huge companies, it gets kind of exciting. And in the same way, I get really excited when I'm in the exam room with a single patient that is starting to become creative about their mindset of their own cancer and realizing that their cancer has forced a momentary pause on everything else, very much as this recent, you know, narrative of a pandemic caused a complete cessation of activity on the planet for a short spell. We needed that pause. And for some people, it was to reinforce the narrative that had gotten us there, a story of fear of viruses, a story of nature attacking humanity. And so we have to fight back even harder with more violent attack on the microbiome, with more Clorox bleach in the air. And we're spraying down our airplanes with Clorox, and we're spraying the air with antimicrobials. And, you know, that was part of that narrative. But the other side of it was humanity started to stop and reevaluate and say, what is an essential service? Why did I lose my job? What is unessential about my job? And maybe your conclusion is, you know, screw you all. I do have an essential job. And I'm going to show you why this is an essential to human import. And so I've seen people reorganize their companies and their messaging and their narrative around what they do because they've realized that it is essential to humanity. And I've seen a lot of my colleagues and friends completely set down 20 years of effort and all of that to go a completely different direction because they realize they are in an unessential service that may have been kept open because the government deemed it essential, but they're starting to question that, and their definition of essential is becoming more personal and less societal. And now everybody's starting to ask, what is an essential role for me to play? What is an essential purpose for me as a person with a short lifespan? just a few decades to express myself. What am I going to express in those short decades? What am I here to do? And so I think that the same creativity that could happen at a Fortune 500 company can happen in the exam room for somebody who takes the moment to become creative about their health and their health narrative, to the same thing for a country who's going to decide it this year whether they're going to reinforce a pharmaceutical juggernaut through participating in an experimental vaccine trial that's larger than any other economic shift in history, or are we going to reclaim some sort of narrative of health autonomy and realize that there's such a thing as health independence, and that we can create our own health at the cellular level, at the personal level, that has no bearing or is not bared upon through some collective narrative about disease or pharmaceutical solutions for it. The freedom and opportunity we have now is to breathe in the optimism, to create the breath and the space and the mindfulness to go into that creative experience that you're describing there.
There's so many things I want to break down. I'm like, we need to talk for 5 hours, which I will not suck up that much of your time. But, you know, something I did really want to talk about, and you did, you know, touch on it a little bit in that explanation, is I've heard, you know, in different interviews, you know, really break down the pandemic and the viruses and everything. And I do have a lot of curiosity around your perspective of cancer. Obviously, there are so many different types of cancer, but the narrative I've watched in my own family is my grandmother at 55 with breast cancer die, my grandfather with lung cancer die in his 50s, my aunt in their 50s. And so it's just like, I don't, you know, share the same narrative, and I'm certainly working hard on not having a similar one, but I'm just so curious to hear about your perspective of cancer.
Yeah, cancer in the end is a very simple, you know, underpinnings to it. It begins with isolation of the cell. And so a connected cell, and cells remain connected to one another through an extraordinary array of fiber optic cables that we call gap junctions. And there's tens of thousands of these fiber optic cables that run from one cell to the next. And they create this massive network, this information pathway that is also a resource pathway. And so you can see the same thing in nature. If you've ever dug in your garden to find that white, you know, filamentous infrastructure to your soil system, if you've got a healthy soil, you'll find this network of mycelium, the root system of the fungi. And that root system is a communication network and a resource distribution network. And the gap junctions in between our cells function the same way. And so a connected cell within community has unlimited access to resources, information, therefore capacity to repair. And that's really important for us to think about on other levels, you know, as we start to think about socioeconomics and political problems and everything else, is take a lesson from cancer to know that isolation is literally the meta disease. Isolation will lead to that, you know, suicidal gunman who climbs a tower in Las Vegas and shoots 250, you know, strangers to death. In that isolation, that doesn't seem like an irrational decision. In that isolation, that individual can actually feel like they're in an altruistic moment at their most horrific moment. And cancer ends up being the same way, that in total isolation, it comes to believe it's the only last living cognizant piece of who you were before. It's so damaged that it doesn't know how to repair. The average cancer cell has, in its disconnect from community, has accumulated around 20,000 unrepaired genetic injuries. And in that genomic disarray, it's now failing to produce the detox pathways, the repair pathways, and everything else necessary to make it a healthy cell. And so the only option left to this single cell that is completely isolated and so damaged it cannot repair, and so lonely that it doesn't believe that it can be replaced by a stem cell or something else, its only option is to divide. And so it starts into rapid division, and it starts to proliferate itself, copies of itself, because it's the only way it's going to keep life preserved. And so a cancer cell in the end is a desperate cell seeking the preservation of life. It does not know that it's taking over your physical body. It thinks your physical body is gone, and it's trying to recreate the last semblance, the last, you know, damaged husk of what you were before. And in so doing, in its desperation, it becomes a tumor in that, you know, rapid cell division. And as that tumor starts to run out of resources, it will, in its continued disconnect from the larger biology of the organism, start to seek new resources. And so it will go metastatic and start to spread through the body and develop new blood and nervous system resources so that it can proliferate faster and more aggressively. And so in the end, if that cell gets reconnected to another cell to find out that it's part of a greater organism and it's part of, you know, billions of other cells that are defining a healthy colon in this individual, and it doesn't have to fight for life because life is all around it and it's abundant and it's in fact regenerative. And so we can just let go, and it does in the form of something called apoptosis, which is programmed cell suicide, and eliminates itself very peacefully. It doesn't take any inflammation, doesn't require your immune system. And so when I was doing chemotherapy research, I was focused on trying to turn on mechanisms of apoptosis. So I was trying to present the cell with toxins that would overwhelm its mitochondrial reservoir and then tip the cell into this apoptosis. With the beautiful expectation, I really, you know, had a lot of hope for the chemotherapy I was developing, that we could envision a pharmaceutical process where we didn't need to poison anybody's body. We could actually just turn on cell suicide within cancer cells. And that was hopeful. But I was missing the point. I was missing the point that it would reveal itself years later after starting a nutrition clinic and starting to really understand the body in a different way. I had missed the point that the cancer cell didn't need to be encouraged to kill itself. The cancer cell simply needed to be reconnected to community. And so when we started to refocus our attention on loving the cancer back into the body by providing nutrients at an incredible density so that even those lonely, distant cells detached from the greater organism started to get real nutrients, started to be able to get some semblance of repair. And more importantly, we discovered in 2012, 13, that the microorganisms within the gut and in soil systems actually produce a communication network that can reconnect those cells. It's a wireless communication system instead of the wired fiber optic system of the body. And so it was an extraordinary journey to find out that if we gave, you know, the wireless communication network back to cancer cells, they could reconnect. And they could reconnect to one another, and they could reconnect to the larger organism system. And they would either go into apoptosis, programmed cell suicide, or they'd go into a state of repair. And so that is now our understanding of cancer, is that cancer is not just isolation from one cell to the next. It's isolation from the soils in which we were supposed to be birthed from, which is the soil of our gut. And so the gut microbiome has now been mapped to be at the epicenter of the cancers. If we start to lose the microorganism density and biodiversity within the colon or otherwise, we then predispose that individual to different types of cancer. So if we lose these species of bacteria, we get breast cancer. We lose these species, we'll get prostate cancer. We lose these species, we'll get thyroid cancer. And so these are the kind of patterns that have emerged now in the last 10 years of genomics. And the message is pretty extraordinary. If at the cell level, we stay connected to community and we stay rooted in our soil systems, we are resilient and we are in a regenerative state of repair that will defy any kind of disease. But the reality is we are built into a biology that is inherently regenerative and does defy disease. And our rate of repair is always faster than the rate of damage if we stay connected and rooted in the biologic reality of microbiologic diversity.
Wow. So powerful. Literally have never heard that explanation before. And that's really, really optimistic and hopeful. And I think it's the perfect segue into talking a bit further about where you're at today, like the state of the art perspective of our microbiome of water, soil, air.
Yeah. You know, so we tackle it from a lot of different angles now. We have a supplement company that I started in 2014 with a bunch of colleagues, and we have really become industry experts at extracting carbon molecules from bacteria and fungi of ancient soils. And so instead of probiotics, which are very monotonous, you know, monocultures of bacteria, instead we are depending on a microbiome diversity that existed in the soils some 60 million years ago, right before the last great extinction happened due to an asteroid that hit the planet and choked out the top soils of the planet through a layer of dust, creating an anaerobic environment. We lost, you know, 87% of life on Earth, including the dinosaurs and the like, 55 million years ago. Well, at that moment, we lost biodiversity within our soil systems that we've never recovered. We've never quite gotten back to that level of biodiversity and nutrient density. The plants that we grow today on the planet cannot actually biologically sustain something like an Allosaurus with its, you know, tiny little head. It has a head about the size of a horse, and it was a pure vegetative diet on that animal. And yet the nutrients were so dense in the food that it could sustain a body that's many times the size of an elephant with that tiny little nutritional intake. And so it's a really extraordinary demonstration of just how much power was on the planet some 55 million years ago at that soil density level. And so we go into the fossil record and we start to extract not any living bacteria and fungi, which are long gone, but instead the communication network they left behind. And so we extract these carbon molecules from soil systems that old, and we put that back into the human experience in the form of a liquid supplement. And the experience is the wireless network turning back on. And so when you turn on the wireless network, cells start to communicate. Even cells that are perhaps disconnected have an opportunity to overcome their disconnection. And the first thing they start doing is increasing their connectivity. And so we've shown again and again in our labs over the last 7 years that every time you take a cell, whether it's a colon cell, a small intestine cell, a vascular cell, blood-brain barrier vascular cell, kidney tubules, and as soon as you expose it to this communication network of the bacteria and fungi of 60 million years ago, as soon as they see that, they start increasing their protein synthesis of tight junctions and gap junctions, and you completely reverse the disconnected state that it results from the toxicity of our current food system that's laced with toxins like Roundup or glyphosate. And Roundup is the weed killer, and its active ingredient, glyphosate, fundamentally destroys the tight junctions between the cells, leaving them isolated. And so the whole probable carcinogen thing definitely is not the real scientific narrative. It is one of the most profound cancer-causing things, not because it damages DNA, which is our old, you know, antiquated definition of a carcinogen. It triggers cancer by creating isolation within our colon, small intestine, vascular system, and beyond. And so by cutting those tight junctions, we see great vulnerability. Our innate immune system, the front line of our innate immune system that keeps us in relationship to the viruses and bacteria, is the tight junction system, and it's broken by Roundup. And we can show in the recent pandemic, for example, that communities that are in high concentrations of these chemicals are the ones that have the highest mortality from the virus. And that's completely predictable because the way in which we stay in communication and healthy relationship with those viruses is through this barrier system, this sense of self-identity through these tight junction systems. And when you give back these communication networks, you can repair those toxic injuries so fast, it boggles the mind. 3 to 5 minutes of communication, and these cells are already rebuilding these complex protein structures and reconnecting. And so I love that the first reaction to optimism at the cellular level is to connect to community more aggressively. And I hope that we learn that at the macro level. I hope that if you have a moment of optimism in your day-to-day, the result of that is a desire to co-create with your fellow man, and you connect harder and you connect more aggressively with your community, and you connect for a co-creative opportunity to build something bigger than yourself. And that's the story that we are learning from this incredible interaction of the wireless communication network of the microbiome and the human biology.
And so some really like tangible takeaways for some, because that's what I can feel probably everybody who will be listening to this. They'll be like, wow, to everything. And they're like, what do I do? Like, what do I start doing right now? And obviously you just gave a really tangible, even though it kind of defies the current situation of the world, the pandemic, community, humongous. I mean, even if you look at the blue zones, that was like a huge part of what was successful about the longevity of their life, I think. What would be other super tangible takeaways in this very moment, including ION in your products?
Yeah, so ION is the product line. The ION gut immune system product was, you know, developed really to initiate this reconnection process in the body. And it's an interesting regulatory environment. When you get into dietary supplements, they're not regulated by the FDA, but the FDA regulates against any claims. And so you cannot claim to prevent, diagnose, or treat any disease. And for the first time, I think that this product actually meets those regulatory standards, and that this product actually does not do any of those things. It doesn't do anything in and of itself. In the same way that your cell phone tower up the street has never initiated a phone call to you, the cell phone tower is simply propagating the phone call from your grandmother to your phone. And so when we talk about a wireless network in the form of a dietary supplement, that's all it's doing is propagating information that's already trying to get across distances within your body. And so we have a nutritional supplement that doesn't do anything in and of itself. It steps into the void between the cells and reconnects that communication network, but it doesn't tell your body to do anything, which is much different than something like vitamin D, for example. Vitamin D is a potent steroid hormone that triggers 2,000 genomic changes as soon as it touches the cell. And those are very predictable changes. And so if you start taking vitamin D, whether your body likes it or not, it's going to start forcing these genomic changes. And so it may be considered a vitamin or dietary supplement, but it is in fact a really potent steroid hormone that is functioning at a drug level kind of thing. And most supplements do that. So most supplements are out there doing something. You think of turmeric or one of these big, potent anti-inflammatories like curcumin. And that compound is doing a myriad of changes to your inflammatory cascades and all of this stuff. Ion is very unique in that it's not doing anything to your body. It's not changing anything. It's going to actually act differently in every single body in the sense that it's just connecting different signals. And so your body may take this on and say, I'm going to accelerate the repair of my gut lining. Somebody else may take it on and it's going to accelerate the production of neurotransmitters. So somebody else might take it on and it changes the sleep patterns. Not because the supplement is doing any of that, but that's what your body was calling for. That was the communication most needed to be amplified. And so the supplement is a very interesting process of listening to your own body ultimately. And so when you start taking the supplement, many of us are healthy enough that it can be very subtle, like not sure anything's really happening. But the longer you stay in that communication zone and you're taking that supplement a couple times a day, steeping your gut and neurologic system in that connectivity, you start to develop some really deep intuitive sense of where your wellness comes from. And that's, by and large, what people describe after six, months on the product is I have this deep reservoir of knowingness, of wellness and knowingness within me that I was disconnected from. And they describe all kinds of different things. We have people who describe suddenly, waking up one morning, realizing that they're in the attic, working on repairing a roof leak. And they're stunned by it because they suffered for 40 years with such severe claustrophobia that they had never been in an attic before. And so there was no drug that overcame the claustrophobia. There was no supplement that overcame the claustrophobia. They had a neurologic shift in connectivity that changed their perception of their reality, and it resolved this phobia completely subconsciously. They had no intention of overcoming. It was something that subconsciously occurred as they changed their worldview through this global connectedness. And so it's a very interesting journey into self-knowing as you hear yourself more clearly, I think, as you go into those supplements. If the oral supplement and the whole gut-brain axis is slow for you to identify the solution, the sinus product is a real game changer. And so our sinus product, everybody can sense within just a few seconds what changes when their sinonasal mucus membrane is exposed to this communication network. And so we have people that will utilize that for a couple of days to really get the experience before they'll start into the gut one to really experience like, okay, now I'm going to pay attention in the same way that I was experiencing that in my nasal membranes and it's so palpable. I'm going to start to learn how to focus in to really listen to my gut brain axis to understand what neurologic and gut shift feels like. It can be a subtle thing, but an exciting thing because what you're doing is building deeper reserve. And the supplement is not just communication network for human cells. Remember, it's made by bacteria and fungi. And so the communication network has a profound effect on increasing the volume of the microbiome within your gut and sinuses. And so you have this explosive population growth of resources within you. And you start not only, taking in the liquid nutrient from the soils of the past, you start becoming that healthy soil base. And so my hope is that, after 5-10 years, people are making the vast majority of ion within their own gut and they're less and less dependent on a supplement form. I've been on it for 7 years now, and I can maybe go, a day or two now without sensing a change. But if I go a week, I'm finding myself, missing it and needing to get back to it to reconnect. And so I don't think I've quite reached a complete status of resiliency in my gut. I'm still, suffering under a lot of antibiotic pressure, right? And so I see a lot of antibiotics in my food system. I see a lot of antibiotics in the air I breathe. The rain that falls, 75% of the rain in the United States is laced with glyphosate, which is a potent antibiotic. And so, I'm surrounded enough that I haven't gotten independent communication network built. But I believe that if we continue on our efforts to change soil, water, and air management, we can get back to human resilience that requires no supplements. So our supplement company is channeling all of its profits back into root cause solutions for the planet in other areas, because we don't believe a supplement is the right way to prevent the extinction of humanity. We think that the supplement is teaching the science that shows us a path back towards a relationship with nature that will not necessitate a supplement. And so we hope that the supplement company goes out of business in coming years as the global community comes to the realization that if we refostered a healthy relationship with soil, water, and air and came to understand human existence as the result of nature, not in combat with that nature, we would change our global behavior. We would stop using antibiotics in our agricultural systems, in our food systems, in our doctor's offices. We would start to embrace viruses, not create narratives of fear and anxiety around viruses. We would embrace the nature around us, and we will find a resilience and a regenerative quality of human health that's been long forgotten. And that's the future I hope to. And so our companies are channeling all that back in to these root cause businesses and nonprofit. The first project was Farmers Footprint, but the nonprofit is called Project Biome. Projectbiome.org is the website if you want to check that out. But we're working on developing relationships in soil, water, and air. And the soil system is where we felt like we needed to begin, because we think that modern agricultural and farming practices are the most detrimental, damaging, destructive force on the planet right now. And so we're helping farmers understand and, you know, create a pathway for greater autonomy and economic benefit and resiliency to their own individual families by switching to this regenerative agricultural system and eliminating the chemical dependence. And in so doing, they can then support the health of billions of consumers that can break their relationship with the pharmaceutical band-aids that we keep throwing on their dis-ease and their disconnect from the natural food systems and nature around us. And so we've tackled it with Farmers Footprint and Project Biome, now looking to partner with other organizations in the areas of soil, water, and air. And so if you are part of a nonprofit or some organization working in those spaces and would like to reach out, please do. We're always eager for collaboration, and the power of story is important. So what you do on this podcast, Lacey, is critical. You know, the public narrative, the public discussion, dialogue is critical to our advancement of knowledge. And you know, no matter how extraordinary the discoveries we might make in our laboratories or however extraordinary the products might be, they would all have no impact without the connectivity of community. And so thank you for being a voice of connectivity within our greater communities here.
Absolutely. And oh my God, thank you for the work that you're doing. How impactful and powerful and important. One last question that I would really kick myself if I didn't ask, because it's a bit selfish, but who knows, my kid will probably die in 80 years anyways out of extinction. But with women who, or anyone who's looking to conceive or parent or bring new life into the planet, what do you think are the most important things to do, you know, preconception, preparing for conception during pregnancy, with the current state of everything?
It's a really wonderful question with really intense implications, obviously, because it's very scary to, you know, bring life into a toxic planet. But what I would say, tell you all in giving you that necessary optimism, is that every time I study biology under the microscope, I find that its capacity to heal is exponentially faster than its rate of damage. And so I believe that's true for the planet. I've seen it happen in farm fields that have been long toxified by chemical agriculture and are completely dead dirt. I can see them turn back into resilient soil systems within just 12 months. You know, just four seasons can transform that soil. And so I would recommend to you to take a look at your last couple decades of life and ask yourself, where do you have damaged soil and for what reasons? Which toxins have you been pouring onto your soil? Is that processed food? Is that alcohol? Is it illicit drugs? Is it recreational drugs? Is it, you know, drug-like patterns of behavior and addiction to exercise, addiction to codependent abusive relationships? You know, where are the toxins you've poured on? And then work to heal that soil. And the fastest way to heal it is reconnect to soil, water, and air. And so I started the hashtag Breathe Your Biome a couple of years ago, and it's been so exciting to see the world embrace that realization, is that it can be as simple as walking out into nature and breathe for a short period of time. And in so doing, you're going to start to rebuild the fundamental soil systems of your body that will make you resilient in areas that have been toxified, damaged, chronically ill. You can reconnect. And so a healthy child is going to begin with how much you are engaging with healthy soil, water, and air systems out there. Caveat, of course, is it's hard to find healthy soil, water, and air, and you're going to have to look harder than we did just 5 years ago or 10 years ago. If you live in Indiana, for example, 80% of the rivers in Indiana are now deemed unsafe for recreational use. They're not just not potable. You're not supposed to touch them. And so 80% of the rivers in Indiana now not touchable. And so that gives you a sense of, you know, just how desperately we've poisoned the Midwest. But we need to explore options for our future families that reconnect them. And so I believe there's going to be a great diaspora of Americans and other affluent Western civilization communities and families that are going to start to move into rural communities around the world and start to become co-creative forces in Peru and South America and, you know, parts of Africa in hopes of creating a healthy future that doesn't follow the suit of the Western civilization chemical dependence on both the agricultural and pharmaceutical sides. And we could become a force in that, and we could become co-creators on this planet with peoples that have not lost their connection to their indigenous wisdoms and their indigenous roots and their healthy soil, water, and air systems. And so I think that there's likely to be a transition there. So in your own life, if you're thinking about conceiving, think about traveling to something healthy. Think about how you're going to bathe your body in nutrients. What practices are you going to do in the day that get you reconnected, whether you live in an inner city environment or some, you know, rural environment or some intoxified corner of the planet? How are you going to start to reconnect to that? And it's maybe as simple as, you know, starting to grow a garden. And if you don't know how to garden, then maybe just grow a single plant. Grow a mint plant. If you feel like you're a brown thumb and you kill everything you touch, mint is like indestructible.
It's like a weed.
It's like a weed. So go ahead and start mint in the window on your windowsill and see how that does. And start to take a few bites from that mint every day so that your body can start to experience what biophotonic energy happens at the source. And start to heal yourself through that reconnection to nature, and then let that mint plant perhaps inspire the container garden on the back stoop that will then inspire the reconnection to the community garden up the street or to your local CSA where you go and volunteer on the weekends or to your new best friend who's a farmer out in rural America who is desperately needing friends because they're so isolated and needs the help and hope of a future where they're reconnected to the consumer. And so dive into your food system and look for the humans behind it. Reconnect there. Reconnect to the air itself. Breathe real systems of air and biology. Running on a path through the woods repopulates the microbiome of your sinuses and your lungs and your gut. It reconnects you to a deep truth of Mother Nature's gift of life on this planet. And so find ways to shake up your day to make sure nature's getting reintegrated, and you will have the opportunity to birth a healthy generation. And I think that, you know, if we were to collectively do this and we were all to follow the Project Biome path and we co-create that biome that we have the opportunity to participate in, we could see a generation of children in 2 or 3 decades that are healthier than any generation born in history. But it's going to take a collective effort, and it'll start with each one of us doing the right thing in our day to day.
I promise you, this is my last question. Truly. I can even feel the energy, you know, intuiting it before this goes live. So many narratives out there about different diet lifestyles, right? Like all the different things that exist. How important do you think any of that is versus eating the cleanest food you possibly can get your hands on, like natural food, organic food, access to, you know, spring water, the cleanest water you can get, the best soil that it's grown in with your farmers markets? What's your whole thought process on diet and food and water?
The same amount of frustration and angst that I feel towards a scientific community that would allow a narrative of vaccine dependence to become the common narrative. I have the same frustration and angst over the diet industry's constant bickering and infighting over whether we should be keto or vegan or paleo or whatever the hell the next fad is going to be. I'm so tired of it because really there's only 2 types of food, and you nailed it, which is there's processed food and there's real food. And if you are a real food person, your body's going to understand that. Life on Earth developed over 4.5 billion years. A billion years, a billion is 1,000 million. So that is a very freaking long time for biology to develop the capacity for nutrient absorption, nutrient integration, and the intelligence of life to come out of that biophotonic event. And so that if you are tied into real food of any sort, you're going to have the ability to be healthy. once you start to develop a space of health within your body, then there's an opportunity for you to start to see yourself as a member of a larger community of food consumers. And then you might make different decisions about what you're eating, not because there's something wrong with meat, but because there's 7.8 billion people on the planet right now. And we need to be judicious about the nutrients we take in because they take different demands on the planet, especially under current, you know, manufacturing and protein industry practices. They can be very toxic. So the step one is to stop fearing food, be proactive in reintegrating with real food that's touched the soil, that's drank real water, that eats, you know, from a biophotonically rich diet. And then you're going to have to go slow on the food chain because, you know, the salmon and big fish of the ocean right now are so full of mercury and plastic and the rest that wild caught's a disaster from a toxic standpoint. So you need to go low on the food system. When I say that, you want something that's not consuming other animals. You want something that's eating algae or something, you know, as low as you can go on the food system. And then you run into problems with toxicity in the mollusks and everything else. But the end point is you're going to find out there's nothing wrong with food itself. What is wrong was human behavior that surrounded that food with toxins. And we need to change those fundamentals. We not need to spend less energy worrying about paleo versus vegan and start understanding that we are products of soil, water, and air systems. We need to start making judicious, intelligent decisions about how our food system interacts with those soil, water, and air systems and how they may damage them or how they may contribute to a regenerative future. And then we will make smart decisions about nutrition. Nutrition is in the end, a story of how close are you to nature. The word nutrition, based on the word nutrient, is, you know, how close are you to soil? And if the closest you are to soil is through processed, you know, meat and cheese, and that's the bulk of your calories in the day, you're lacking a lot of the biophotonic energy, or you're at a great distance from the soil and green grass that powered that cow. Remember that the cow was kicked off the teat at 4 months of age and ate grass the rest of its life. And that's what gave it the biophotonic potential to grow 1,200 pounds of lean muscle, is because it's connected directly to the source of soil, air, and sunshine. And that's what powers that body. If you're not connected to soil, water, and sunshine at a fundamental level, you're not going to have the health of that cow may have enjoyed before they ended up in a feedlot. That's the journey into nutrition, is really starting to shake off all of these narratives that do nothing more than sell books, as far as I'm concerned. Everybody's trying to get their podcast or their book sold because they're some part of the new diet or new fasting or whatever the hell it is. We need to lose that and shake off all of that and realize that we are only as healthy as our connection to nature, and our food is a powerful way to reconnect to nature. And that's where our nutrition stories need to emerge.
Love it. That is fantastic, fantastic information. So community, ION, which I'm so excited to try. Jessica's going to share her experience that she's had with it so far. And then accessing real water and real food and that's touched real soil seems to be quite simple. And I think a really big takeaway too that is so valuable to me and this community is really taking inventory wherever you stand in life right now, but just philosophizing and thinking about how one can have more creative space to also, in this moment, create the health narrative that they want.
Yes, I love it. That is a beautiful summary of many, many words. So thank you for being concise with that.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful for your time. We'll probably bug you again in the near future to have you back on because I still have a slew of questions, but my codependency is like, I've got to give him time to get back to his day. So I can't thank you enough. We're so grateful. You've been a huge, huge voice during this time of grounding reason, science, just logic. And I just really want to thank you for that.
Lacey, thank you so much for being you and for holding space for this community to come together over this podcast. And thank you each listening to the attention and energy that you have participated with. You are part of this community, and I just thank each one of you for your time and attention.
Hey guys, Jessica here. Wow. I mean, that episode was insane. I cannot wait to replay it and re-listen and really soak up all of the bits of information that Lacey and Dr. Zach Bush were talking about. I wanted to pop on here really quick and share my experience with Ion. So I'm someone who's seriously struggled with gut issues, leaky gut, inflammation, skin issues, digestion, I mean, the whole gambit. So I'm constantly looking for a holistic way to heal my body, mind, soul, and gut-brain access. And so when I was learning about the science of Ion and how thin our gut lining is and how it helps the cells communicate to each other and basically helps them repair in a really organic, natural way that our bodies used to be able to do when we had richer soil, I was so hooked and excited. And so I've been taking it for about 2 months now. And some of the biggest things I'm noticing is, A, the protection against taking it before I eat the pizza or extra glass of wine on the weekend and being able to digest those things a lot easier. But the massive shift for me was a sense of clarity, lack of brain fog, no decision fatigue. It was more of like a mental alertness and awareness, which makes sense because if I'm suffering from leaky gut, then things are going into the blood-brain barrier and all of that. But with Ion, I feel like it's really helped me get back and have a communication that's healthy within my body so I can have that mental clarity, make decisions without second guessing, and move through life with ease. And it was really noticeable to me because I wound up not taking it over the New Year's weekend. And I noticed so heavily complete brain fog, digestive issues, feeling inflamed, body just feeling out of alignment. And then going back home and being back on it again, it was like, phew, night and day. So I highly recommend it. And if you are looking to try it out, we have code TBM15 for 15% off, as Lacey mentioned. And if you guys have any other questions, feel free to DM me. Thanks, guys.
I hope you found that episode as impactful as I did. It certainly resonated with me, and there was a lot of information to take away in that. If you did, feel free to forward it over to any friends or family or somebody you know who could really benefit from the information. And every single month, we pick a 5-star winner, meaning that they've given a 5-star review about how this work or podcast has impacted their life. And they receive a 1-year membership to the pathway. Well, this month is no exception. We have quite a few, but the one that I picked and really wanted to share with everybody, because I think it's really fun to hear the micro manifestations that are coming in. Micro manifestations are super important to build the trust muscle that you're doing the right process that will therefore result in much bigger manifestations, because you see to believe along the way that when you jump off cliffs, pass tests, unblock, and find expanders, that things really start to fall into place. So this one is from the username Empire Attitude, and it's called Kismet. So Empire Attitude, please get in touch with our customer service on the site in order to receive your 1-year free membership to the pathway. So they write, Kismet. I've been doing Lacey's work since a friend took me to the Sage Wellness event back in 2017. I've unblocked, expanded, and manifested so many areas of my life. I've listened to every podcast episode and find each conversation to be inspiring, expanding, and filled with golden nuggets of wisdom. I'm so grateful to have found Lacey and love that she started the TBM podcast. I'm just going to make a side note and say that the team started that and not take credit for it. But getting back to her words, I have to share this recent personal manifestation of mine, as it truly is kismet. I've been working on unblocking the old subconscious patterning of having to work hard all the time to be successful. After years of running on coffee and living for the corporate world, I'm finally setting boundaries and my time and well-being. After working through the updated inner child workshop last month, I decided to manifest a retreat of some kind, something to focus on rejuvenating my mind, body, and spirit. Even though most of my coworkers had already requested time off over the holidays, I decided to request a couple of days off as well and do a virtual retreat at home. Los Angeles COVID times are not so conducive with an actual retreat. I was looking forward to spending some time focusing on myself at home and still had a future in-person retreat on my manifestation list. PTO was granted, and a few hours later, after I had stood in my worth and requested PTO, meaning personal time off for people who don't know, to focus on me, I received an email for no other than Conscious City Guide, episode 54 we have with founder Mel of Conscious City Guide, letting me know I had won their 2020 website giveaway, which includes a 1-night retreat in Topanga for me and 3 friends, fresh food dinner cooked by a chef, tea ceremony with Mel, so lucky because Mel's the best, healing, and other amazing goodies. I'm still so grateful and giddy for this opportunity, And I know the TBM work and podcast have been instrumental in these expansions. I can't wait to do more in 2021. Thank you, TBM team. So if you have a great experience with this work or the podcast, feel free to leave your experience below in a 5-star review to enter yourself to win a 1-year membership to The Pathway. Until next week.